Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Americans love their pets, and more Americans are feeling that love. According to the American Veterinary Medical Association, nearly 57% of all U.S. households owned a pet at the end of 2016. About 38% of households nationwide owned one or more dogs, the highest estimated rate of dog ownership since the association began measuring in 1982. And we're not afraid to spend money on our pets. The American Pet Products Association released their annual report on spending in March, and it shows Americans spent a record-breaking $72.5 billion in 2018. And for many, animals aren't just pets. They're members of the family. And like family, some pets are better behaved than others. Tom Shelby has spent his career training and working with dogs, first in canine search and rescue, and later as a private dog trainer. He writes the Dog Charmer column in the Martha's Vineyard Times, and he's the author of the new book, Dog Training Diaries, Proven Expert Tips and Tricks to Live in Harmony with Your Dog. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you. All right, you've been working with dogs for a long time now. So when did you first realize that you enjoyed working and training dogs? How did that become a career for you?
Interesting. I hadn't really thought about it, but my girlfriend, who's been my wife for the last 40-plus years, when we were dating, she was going on a trip to Europe, and she asked me to take care of her dog, a little toy poodle named Noelle. And I took her home and just started teaching her some tricks, and I found I was pretty good at it. I mean, that really was the origin, and I found I just guessing what seemed to make sense in terms of the training at the time. I hadn't read anything about it. It was a very long time ago. We were in college, and I just started teaching her tricks, just trying to figure out how to get the dog to respond. And when my wife Jay came home from Europe, I showed her about three or four tricks, and she was thrilled, and that was how it all got
started.
Rest
is history. Yeah.
Exactly.
So how does training a dog for search and rescue differ from when you're working with companion dogs?
It's quite different because people's lives may depend on a working dog, and I need the obedience to be very tight. One of the key commands that I teach with a regular family and is very important for a search dog is the leave it command, it being whatever I want the dog to leave. So for the family walking down the street, be it a pizza crust on the ground, a squirrel, a cat, I say leave it, the dog needs to ignore it. But on a search, and I've been on a search where a deer came crashing through the woods within 15 feet of us, and my dog just looked up, and I almost whispered, leave it, and she went back to work. So I need a real tight response for a working dog is a little bit less tight on the family dog. Mm-hmm. As I said, people are depending on this dog doing a good job, the working dog, as opposed to regular training. Mm-hmm.
Your first book was about your search and rescue work with your dog, Michelle.
Yes.
So tell us a little about Michelle and maybe a memorable experience of Michelle.
Michelle was wonderful. She really was a big sister to my children. And I was just explaining to Mindy, I consider Dobermans short-haired shepherds and shepherds long-haired Dobermans. Good working dog, the right size for search and rescue. Excuse me. And Michelle found two people alive and some not. And I used to play games in the home. Once we had the type, when I lived in New York, of attic where you'd pull a ladder down, and the dog was outside, and my wife pulled the ladder down. I climbed into the attic, and she put the ladder back up. And then when the dog came in, we played games, and she told Michelle to find me. And Michelle ended up in the bathroom off the, and this loft area was through a large closet. She ended up in the bathroom barking at a vent where apparently my scent was coming out of the vent from the attic. Mm. And that's how she alerted where I was. We had a lot of fun. I also used to play hide and seek, where I would have kids hide on a birthday party of my three children. The best game they had was sending one or two kids to hide somewhere in the house, and you'd hear the screaming when Michelle found them. And that's, they all wanted to come to the house for the birthday parties to play with Michelle.
That's so funny. So how would you describe your approach to training dogs?
My approach to training dogs is first to ask probably 50 questions of the owners. So I get a better handle on what we're talking about, from where does the dog sleep? Has the dog ever growled at you? I would say when the dog is eating, can you put your hand in the food bowl? If that's a yes, then I might ask if you were eating baby back ribs and a rib slipped off the table and fell on the floor and the dog got it, could you take it from the dog? And if not, that's one of the 6 to 8 different types of aggression. That's called resource guarding, the resource being the baby back rib, or possessive aggression, being possessive over the rib. But that can be very subtle. You could have grandma sitting on the couch with her toy poodle and the 3-year-old grandchild approaches and the poodle growls. The resource in that case is grandma that the dog doesn't want to share with the grandchild.
Yeah.
So the approach is a whole heck of a lot of questions. And then depending on what I hear is how I suggest the initial meeting between the family and the dog and myself. And there are some dogs that are extremely aggressive territorially in the house, and I'll have them meet me 2 or 3 blocks from the house. Maybe I'm leaning against the car and they walk up to me pretending they know me and we start talking, and then we walk into the house together. And I have eliminated that territorial response. Very often I'll take the leash from them before we walk into the house. So now I'm walking the dog into the house with me holding the leash, and it's a whole different attitude.
The dog's like, I guess he's supposed to be here.
Yeah, exactly.
So dogs become family members to a lot of people, and sometimes we forget that they don't think like we do. They're not motivated by the same things that we are. So what are some of the most important parts of the dog brain that we need to understand if we want a well-trained dog?
Well, I try and explain something that's really important. Dogs read 2 things extremely well. One is body language. There's no domestic animal that denotes the body language of a human better than a dog. That's what they read. The second thing that they read is voice intonation. And one of the most important things I endeavor to share with people is to help them prevent the inadvertent rewarding of unwanted behavior. People reward behavior in their dogs they don't want without realizing it all the time. For example, you have the dog that's aggressive at the door. 1,000 times I've been met at the door with somebody holding their dog back on the leash, and the dog wants to eat my kneecap at the door. So what is the owner doing as he's holding the dog back? He's petting the dog, saying very softly and lovingly, "It's okay. It's okay." And training a dog is letting the dog know you like the behavior or you do not. As the behavior is happening, assume the correct assumption, they live in the moment. So in the moment, the dog is barking vociferously and being aggressive at the door, and the owner wants that aggression to stop. So what is the body language being communicated to the door? Well, he's petting him. Mm-hmm. So he's rewarding that aggressive behavior. And what is his voice intonation? He is saying, "It's okay. It's okay.
You're
it's
doing
not
a great job."
Yes. So he's literally rewarding the aggression. And as I say to people, listen, if your 5-year-old child is frightened of the ghost at the door on Halloween, you could tell that child, "It's okay. It's a little boy under a sheet." But your response to a dog predicated on 2 things, your body language and your voice, is what teaches a dog. And understand how subtle it is. I've been married now, about 108 years. And if I say something my wife doesn't like, I can take one look at her face and I know she's not happy. Everybody out there with a partner will know the look I'm talking about, I'm sure. So does your dog. Your dog actually reads your face just as well as it reads your body language. And I've had many including an actress who refused to give me body language for about 15 minutes, was frustrating. I said to the lady, here's what I'd like you to do. I want you to curse at the dog. I want you to say some very nasty things, but I want you to convince the dog you're praising the dog. At which point, the woman, being a consummate professional actress, very beautifully was saying, oh, you little piece of dirt, I hate you. But she said it very lovingly. The dog's tail was wagging, and she was saying negative things, but the dog was thinking it was being
positive,
praised.
Yeah.
Body and voice.
All right, we got an email from Anne. She says, this is Anne from Edgartown. I have a sweet schnauzer named Murphy. She's 4 years old and good in every way except barking every time anyone comes to our door. She barks her head off, but once the person is inside for a few long minutes, she is quiet. Any suggestions?
Yes. I may or may not have mentioned there are 6 to 8 different types of aggression, and the key aggression that actually was one of the reasons man and dog bonded is territoriality. Nobody can sneak into your house without the dog alerting you. Now, the barking can become quite a nuisance. So one of the lessons that I train, and it's one of the latter lessons, is what I call the door routine, so that the dog becomes civil at the door. And that would consist of when the schnauzer barks, the first thing I do is praise her and thank her for warning me. And then I would tell the guest to hold on a minute. And then I would send the dog, I would teach it to go to a spot within sight of the door, lie down and stay to earn her first treat. And now she's busy. She's going to be much less likely to bark. And then I go answer the door. The dog has to hold the stay. This is not an easy lesson. That's why it's one of the latter lessons, because the dog needs to know to lie down, to stay, to be a cooperative, And then I would release the dog to come forward, sit, and get the second treat as it sniffs the guest. Also, the dog may just need to learn what the command quiet means. And the way I would teach that would really vary with the temperament of the dog. There are some dogs that look in the mirror and see God, and some dogs that are very, I call them dyslexic, the word God and dog being reversed. And there are some dogs that are much more mellow, and I would use a much gentler form of teaching the dog to be quiet, usually redirecting the dog.
All right, since you mentioned God, let's talk about God, Joan Rivers and her dogs. You taught that it's God interfering, it's not Joan Rivers.
Yeah, this was, I trained Joan Rivers' dogs. By the way, it's very hard to get a comedian to laugh. She was very tough.
No?
I had her whole staff laughing, and she was pretty stone-faced as I was sitting there. I never forgot that. Nice lady, however. She was very friendly, but didn't laugh a lot when I told my jokes. Yeah, her dog, that was a housebreaking issue. And as I say to people often, you know, I don't care if the dog does your kids' homework and takes out the garbage. If it's urinating or defecating in the house, it gets pretty old pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And that was a housebreaking lesson, the first lesson on really getting the dog housebroken. And I talk about the dog god. It's a concept I kind of created. The dog god sees all the time and doesn't like it when when the dog urinates or defecates in the house. So, and I've done this also with what I call a leave it command. For those of you who can put your donut or your chicken sandwich on the coffee table and walk out of the room for one reason or another, and the dog then proceeds to help itself to your sandwich, which it wouldn't do if you stayed in the room, this requires the dog god, and it pertains to housebreaking also. When you're out of the room, the dog has to understand it needs to leave the sandwich alone. So the way I set the dog up, I use entrapment a great deal. So I would take the sandwich or a piece of meat and put it in a Tupperware container that I would perforate, so that you don't want to just put the hot dog on the table. If the dog grabs the hot dog quickly and swallows it, no matter what you do, after that, the dog's self-rewarded with the hot dog. So it's in a Tupperware container that's perforated a great deal, so the smell, it's very odoriferous. And you put it on the coffee table and you leave the room, but now you have a mirror set up so that you can see that little Tupperware container, but the dog can't see you. And let's say you just take two pots from the kitchen. And you look in the mirror, and the dog walks into the room, looks around. Nobody can see it, it thinks. And just as the dog reaches for that Tupperware container, bang the two pots together. You say nothing. You had nothing to do with it. The dog doesn't like it when you take my stuff, and the dog god bangs pots. The dog will probably screw itself through the ceiling in startlement. And what's it going to relate that startlement? Remember, they live in the moment. It's going to relate to taking the food it knows it really shouldn't take. You're going to walk in the room a few seconds later and say, hey, Bowser, how you doing? You had nothing to do with it. Yeah. This was a dog guide. You're going to be happy as can be. And the dog's going to start to learn where you do this kind of thing, that whether you're in the room or not, the food is not allowable.
Because the dog god is watching.
Dog god sees all the time. Now, the same can pertain to housebreaking. If you can't observe the dog to see the signs when it has to urinate or defecate, you can set the dog up with a mirror, and if it's you'll see the signs, it's walking back and forth, it's about to defecate, or sniffing, all of a sudden the nose goes to the floor and it's looking for the right spot. To a dog, it's through the nose. And you can then startle it with a noise or be there to take the dog out. Yeah. Housebreaking's a biggie.
It's hard, yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Tom Shelby. His book is Dog Training Diaries, Proven Expert Tips and Tricks to Live in Harmony with Your Dog. Our number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So some trainers say it's more about training dog owners than the dogs themselves. What do you think about that?
It takes me, it takes me usually minutes to train a dog and weeks to train the owners. That's the hard part, you know, if the people don't follow through, and I give everybody homework, including the kids, and if nothing is done in between, it's going to be a lot more lessons. I need cooperation, you know, and I've had quite a few times over the years, people say to me, will you move in with us just for a few days? A couple of times I was actually tempted, but I need follow through and cooperation.
Yeah. You had a really tough case. Tell us about the dog Daniel and Eunice's dog Daniel. That was a really tough one.
Yeah, Daniel, that's one of, I should say, the original book that I wrote were 22 stories, because I had crazy stories like the Daniel story, and the publisher decided they wanted a training manual instead, so I rewrote it as a manual, and they just included several of the stories, and Daniel is one of those stories. Daniel, this lady, I love this lady, she adopted, she took dogs in to foster them and then adopt them out, and Daniel was extremely aggressive. With people intermittently. I mean, there was no clear sign with everybody, and the intermittency makes it much more difficult. If a dog is aggressive with anybody, you can expect it. If it's intermittent, it's much more difficult to figure out ahead of time when something's going to happen. And I had an incident with this, Mindy is referring to probably, in a parking lot of a mall. We had walked it. We had done a bunch of things with it. It was going well. And I had taught the dog to sit and stay for the first time, to use some, contain itself and use some self-control. And I saw the body language change. And in the parking lot, the dog really started coming after me repeatedly, and I've needed a couple of rotator cuff surgeries from lifting, holding the dog off of me using the leash, and a crowd actually formed around us. This was about an 85-pound dog. As the dog kept coming after me, wanting to really do some damage. And I was managing to hold the dog off as best I could, and a crowd formed and people were saying, call the police. And I finally got a modicum of control and got the dog back in the car. And then we went back into the apartment. I refused to sit down. If you remember the story, I was afraid this dog. I would be too vulnerable.
Because there was no sign. It would just attack you out of nowhere.
The sign was this crazy tail would all of a sudden whip out straight, which I learned the hard way that was the sign this dog was had enough. And it went after me in the apartment again. And that was a very, very difficult one, dealing with that type of aggression. And I really needed this lady to muzzle this dog, you know, get it acclimated to a muzzle to keep everybody safe.
And God bless her. Her vet said, you need to put this dog down. And she's like, I'm not. And then when you hear her story, she had gone herself from foster home to foster home, and she was not going to have Daniel go through that.
This is what made it hard. The lady, the owner herself, had been through foster homes, and she just so identified with this dog, she refused to have it euthanized. And I agreed to work with her, but I wanted her to sign a release. It was a tough case.
Yeah, that's a tough one. All right, so let's see. Elizabeth writes, how do you deal with a dog that is inherently vocal? Our dog Sparky is part beagle, and we struggle with him and his need to bark.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I like how she put that.
Yes, you have a very vocal breed. I mean, it's a hound, and they bay, and they do what they do. The dog needs to learn what quiet means. And again, it depends on what elicits the barking initially. And you can desensitize a dog to that and redirect it. So, if I had some idea what initiates the barking in the first place, you can try simulating that sound and then doing a redirection lesson where when the dog hits that sound, it does something else for which it garners a treat. Or it just needs to learn to be quiet with some kind of correction. And I can't just throw out any. The corrections I use on dogs, it can be a frown. I don't use the word no. By the time I get there, half of the dogs think their name is No Bad Dog. I saw a great T-shirt on the vineyard of one dog meeting another saying, hi, my name's No Bad Dog, what's yours? And I never forgot that. Yeah. So I just say as opposed to no. With a frown on my face.
Yeah. So many people might think they have a well-behaved dog. So tell us how you would describe a well-behaved dog. What are the basic manners a dog should have?
A well-behaved dog is not going to jump on you, is not going to demand to continue to be petted if your body language is indicating you're not thrilled petting the dog. It's not going to be barking in your face constantly. It's going to give you space and be cooperative and respond. If you say, hi, sweetheart, and it's obvious you want to pet this dog, it'll come over and be gentle without jumping, without mouthing, that type of thing. You just want an easy flow where you can harmonize with the dog without it being too intrusive.
866-999-4626 is our number if you have a comment or question for us this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So let's say you're bringing home a puppy. You have this clean slate. You have this little puppy. What are the basic do's and don'ts with a puppy to start working toward basic manners?
Do I have an age on this puppy?
Well, any age you like.
No, any age I like. Well, listen, as I said, one of my lines is it's amazing how much of my life revolves around feces and urine. So on a puppy, the first thing you want to deal with is the housebreaking. And dogs have what's called a den instinct, meaning they keep their den clean. So when you use a crate and you feed the dog in the crate, you'll find dogs don't like to make where they sleep and where they eat. And the analogy I use more often than not is I will say to people, do you have meals in your bathroom? And so far, 100% of the people have said no, they don't, which I was glad to hear. So the fact that, so if you feed the dog in the crate and it sleeps in the crate, and if it's very, very young and is unable to hold all night, then you leave the crate door open and perhaps put a pee pad or paper outside the crate, not at the entrance to the gated area, but on the side, so the dog can get up, leave its den, use the paper, and then go back and keep its den clean. When you come in the morning and the paper has not been used, you now know the dog can hold its water all night. At that point, you close the crate, and the dog will hold it rather than urinate or defecate in its den. And you're bringing it outside. I mean, I spend a whole chapter on housebreaking the puppy and housebreaking the older dog that you adopted that is having mistakes. And it's a little different in dealing with them.
All right. Marilyn says, we have a very sweet 15-year-old dog. We got him as a rescue when he was about one and a half. He always had separation anxiety, but it was completely manageable for years. Some medication for a few years, but also just conditioning. Recently, it's really ramped up, especially when my husband leaves, panting, whining, etc. Our vet recommended medication, but it actually made it worse. We also tried a thunder shirt. You know what that is, a thunder shirt. And he's always been completely calm during thunderstorms and fireworks. Any suggestions?
Yeah, it's really kind of common. The dog, when they get older, they get less secure and less confident, and the separation anxiety on the younger dog is manageable, and as they get older and less secure, it becomes more and more unmanageable. I'm sorry that the medication didn't work. You may want to try changing medications. A 15-year-old dog is really quite old. And you're going to find that can be a very difficult issue to deal with, the separation anxiety. I do a whole list of things dealing with separation anxiety. You know, I've had people actually take careful notes of all the things they do before they leave the house. So if you're a traveling salesman with a dog that suffers from separation anxiety, you pull the suitcase out. By the time you fill it, the dog's a basket case, knowing you're going to leave. So I've had people go through all the subtle things they do before they leave the house and actually do that several times during the day and not leave the house and start desensitizing the dog to all the clues that it gets that you're going to leave, and it starts getting desensitized to that. The Clomacom was FDA approved for dogs for separation anxiety. You can try, believe it or not, country western music is helpful, and second to that is classic music. It's a difficult situation. I leave what I call our special toys. So if the only time on planet Earth your dog gets people food, let's say a piece of meat wedged in a hollow marrow bone, is when the dog is left alone, and when you come home you remove that, it might be more amenable to your leaving the dog alone. But at age 15, it's a psychological problem that can be quite difficult. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. Let's talk to Laura, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Laura.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Laura.
I'm calling we have a 3-year-old German short hair pointer who is lovely, but we've never had a German short hair pointer before. We've always had labs and retrievers. So her personality is just completely sort of much different than what we're used to dealing with. She's much more prey-oriented, not as people-oriented as our previous dogs. And we've had some issues recently where she has, if she's in her bed or she seems to like fall asleep very, very soundly. And if she gets surprised, especially by either, not me or my husband, but either one of our kids or someone else who's in our house because she's sleeping so soundly, she wakes up and barks like she's going to attack. She's never bitten or anything, but she just gets really upset. And we're trying to figure out how do we prevent that from happening. We're not really sure what's going on. The only thing I can think of is, you know, to leave her alone when she's sleeping. But sometimes that's like, you know, in the middle of our living room. And
right.
Yeah. How old is the dog?
She's 3. So she's still young and she's still
3 years.
Learning more every day. Yeah, 3 years old.
Okay. And how old is the youngest child?
12.
All right. So we're not talking about toddlers that, you know, can fall on the dog or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, what I would suggest when you're going to wake the dog up is you do it, or you have the children do it very softly with treats, so that you could put a treat next to the dog's nose when it's sleeping. You're going to see very often all of a sudden the nose start wiggling a little bit as it picks up the scent. And very softly from a couple of feet away, what's the dog's name?
Frankie.
Tracy?
Frankie.
You could, you know, very softly from a couple feet away, hey, Frankie, and maybe toss a treat or let the dog discover the treat. And it wakes up on a very positive basis to pick up the treat in front of it and then get another treat tossed to it and then call Frankie over. Come on over, have Frankie sit and earn his third treat. Mm-hmm. I would go through a routine like that. Rather than startling the dog. I've seen it before. You know, I've seen an awful lot of things with the vast experience I have that you don't see in books. It's an interesting question. Rage, I remember Cocker Spaniels had what was what's referred to as rage syndrome, where the Cocker would wake up and literally get very aggressive with the nearest person it saw. So it's, you know, this dog isn't aggressing, but it's barking. And you just want to redirect that into waking up, and instead of barking, it eats that little treat in front of its nose and then gets another one tossed to it and then comes and sits and gets its third treat, yeah. And you'll probably change that whole routine.
Yeah, Laura, thanks for the call and the question. Good luck with that. Hope that works out for you. This is, my dog knows if I have treats, and she's less eager to obey when I don't have them. Any advice?
Yes. Listen, understand something. Whoever sent in this question, as if you're sitting or you're standing, as you're sitting or standing, you're dropping 40,000 dead skin cells a second. I use dogs to find missing people. You can't imagine a dog's scenting ability. If your dog is not brachycephalic, it doesn't have the pushed-in nose like a pug or a bulldog. Let's say it's the German short hair pointer that we were just talking about. That dog probably has 200, 220 million olfactory cells. We have 5 million. So your dog could probably smell a bone of a decomposed body 40 feet under the water in a lake from a rowboat. I just have to teach it to tell me when it does. So the dog is totally cognizant of the treats in your pocket. So when I train a dog, you start initially using the treats, and then you use them very intermittently. So I would suggest you do this 15 times a day. When the dog doesn't expect it, call the dog to come. The first three, four times it arrives, it sits and gets a treat. After the first three or four times, it gets a lot of praise, but gets the treat intermittently. If you do that effectively, the dog's attitude is going to become, maybe there's a treat, maybe not. I better go check it out. and it's going to start coming when called. Intermittency is the strongest way to condition an animal, be it a monkey or a dog. Right. Intermittency will keep them coming. So don't always have the treats, but a lot of praise, and start working the dog into that intermittency guessing so that the dog starts really responding in hope that there's a treat.
866-999-4626 is our number. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Tom Shelby. His book is Dog Training Diaries, Proven Expert Tips and Tricks to Live in Harmony with Your Dog. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Deborah from Wellfleet writes, I have a six-year-old female rescue, 35-pound, possibly a shepherd mix, who lives with three small dogs and became aggressive with strange dogs when she was about 2 to 3 years old. She's unpredictable, but great with the other three she lives with. I now have her only on a leash and harness when outside, but I'm very tense when other loose, unknown dogs approach. This is especially a problem in summer when there's an influx of tourists and their dogs. How do you curb her aggression?
This is not uncommon. And understand something. So you're walking down the street with a dog on your leash, and you see another dog, and as you said, you're tense. So the first thing you do is you tighten the leash. So the dog was relaxed, hanging out, all of a sudden the leash gets tightened, and very often you'll see the other dog before your dog will. And now you use the dog's name with anxiety in your voice. So let's say you're standing in a park, and you're facing one direction, the dog's facing another. Somebody walks into the park with a dog on the leash. You immediately assume the worst. You tighten the leash, and you use your dog's name with anxiety in your voice. You're going, Bowser. Meanwhile, your dog hasn't even seen the other dog. It now turns around, and what is it going to relate all the anxiety through the tight leash and the anxiety in your voice? It's going to relate it to the dog it's looking at. And you've actually exacerbated the issue. So, and I've dealt with this 1,000 times. I will walk down the street when I see another dog. The first thing I start doing is making love to the dog on my leash with my voice. Hi, look at that. That could be your best buddy. And I start conning the dog. So the dog is now looking at me, kind of smiling, and I'm giving it treats as it has seen the other dog. I'm getting very, very positive. Now, this is a dog that I will have taught the command leave it to before we take that walk. If it starts aggressing, I immediately step in front of it and I give it a correction with the command leave it. I will say leave it, and if it doesn't, I'll step in front of it and give it a correction. The split second it stops barking, I will continue walking with a loose leash, and loose leash is mentioned in my book many times. If you have a tight leash, you are creating anxiety. You need a loose leash so the dog is cooperating, and I'm making love to the dog, and it's relating the happy, joyful time and treats to the other dog that it's looking at. This can be a difficult problem, especially if you have a history of it for years and years. I also go out of my way, and you can also find a way to practice something like this, that your dog is much less aggressive off-leash because it's not connected to you by leash, where you may think it's protecting you. It actually feels supported by being connected to you with the leash. It's like a little kid who's pretty tough with another kid because he's got his big brother standing behind him. Mm-hmm. Take the big brother away, he becomes much more civil. So let's say you go to a fenced-in area and you let your dog play off-leash with another dog for 15, 20 minutes. Then you put both dogs on a leash and take a walk together. And you start acclimating your dog to harmonizing with other dogs while it's on the leash. So let's say you take a little walk together and then you have the other dog step into a store, disappear, and then come out again a couple of minutes later, and you have that confrontational meeting, but this time you're making love to the dog. Look at that. That's your buddy, and you may have a very successful meeting like this. It takes effort, and you need to make the effort, as we're old enough to know. You get what you put in. You need to make that effort, and that's where I come in. Yeah. I make the effort, and we do it correctly.
All right. Donna's giving us a call from Provincetown. Good morning, Donna. Nope, we don't have Donna. Okay. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. 4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. You write that dogs are very good at being sneaky. So does this mean that they know what they're doing is a misbehavior, or that they're simply responding to how we respond when they have this misbehavior?
It's actually a little of both. And dogs, they get very, you use the word sneaky, I use the word manipulative. And I tell people all the time, your dog is probably a lot smarter than you realize. It will get away with what it can, and it will be manipulative. Listen, one of my daughters walks her dog, feeds the second feeding every day at 3 o'clock now. It used to be 5:36, but the dog has trained my daughter to be fed at 3. Listen, I have come into so many homes and have found an extremely well-trained family. I remember a petit basset. I remember a breed of a small dog where I came into the house and the woman gave me a list as long as her arm of what the dog would not do. It would not eat dog food. It would not walk down two steps into the sunken living room. It would not be groomed. A list as long as your arm. And I remember thinking, what a well-trained family this dog has. And I took the dog home and returned a real dog. Yeah,
it's interesting how smart they are. And I was just thinking, I had a little Bichon who had diabetes, and so he used to get a shot of insulin at 8 in the morning and 8 at night. And it would be like he'd be standing there, and he'd do a little pause, like click, 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 like, and we'd say, not time yet, it's not time yet. But it was almost like this, like he knew when the time was coming. It must have felt something in his body, it's time for my shot, you know?
Yeah, believe me, they are very cognizant of routines. They are creatures of habit. They really do form habits. And, you know, be it 8 o'clock based on whatever the dog relates to. And it could also be the husband saying, did you give the dog the diabetes shot? And the dog hears that and knows it's coming. There's a whole bunch of routines that dogs pick up on that people are not cognizant of, but the dogs are.
Yeah. A big problem a lot of people have is separation anxiety. And we talked a little bit about that. But you tell the story of a Yorkshire Terrier who couldn't be in a crate or behind a gate. And I was telling you before we went on the air, I had a dog very much like that. You could lock her out, but not in. So you could shut doors that she couldn't get into rooms, but if you shut her in a room, same thing. She'd claw at that until her paws bled.
Yeah, I had a Yorkshire Terrier in Manhattan that really had bloody paws constantly because whatever was put in front of it, be the door to the hallway, a bedroom door, a crate, a gate, it just scratched at it. Its paws were continually bleeding. I thought I had a brilliant idea. I had maintenance put an eye bolt into the middle of the ceiling of the middle of the living room. We put the dog bed down, bowls around it, and some toys. And we ran an elastic line from the ceiling to the dog's leash, and we put the dog in a harness. And the dog was now basically leashed to the middle of the living room floor. It had its bed and its toys and the like, nothing to scratch against. And I thought it was a brilliant idea. The problem was, no matter how tight I cinched the harness, the dog would somehow squeeze out of the harness, run to the front door, and start scratching. And it was sad. I mean, I thought I had the harness on. It could barely breathe, but it always got out, and I couldn't do it any tighter, and we had to resort to drugs, which were partially successful. Mm-hmm. And we would put boots on the dog and do all kinds of things. But listen, there are mental institutions for people. We don't have them for dogs, and I've met dogs that really had mental issues.
Yeah. Surprising how often people will call you to help with their dogs, and then they are not willing to modify their behavior with the dog. We talked about Eunice earlier, but you also had a woman who wanted you to train her dogs to behave during her dinner parties. And you told her she'd have to stop sharing her meals with the animals. And she replied, and give up the best part of my day?
Yes, this is an opera singer who got up around noon and then had lunch. And she had, the dog we're talking about is Brunhilde, was a 205-pound Mastiff. And Brunhilde sat at her right, at the right corner of the table. She had a cat named Wigmore that sat on the table and a little Maltese named Diva who sat on the floor by the left front leg of the chair. And she had a plate of ham on the table. And she, the first bite went to Brunhilde, then to Wigmore, then to Diva, and then she would have a bite. And then she wondered why the cat was swatting at the food. The dog was drooling. Brunhilde's head was above the table. And if you know what a mastiff is like, you had a pool of saliva on the right corner of the table. And Diva was barking incessantly, demanding her food. And she wanted me to make Brunhilde civil at the table. And I told her the truth. We have to stop this feeding at the table. I mean, it's not going to work otherwise. And actually, she was on tour in Europe, and I was called by one of her major domo who took care of the dogs and the cat, to practice at the meals. And I taught Brunhilde what I call a place command. We pick a spot with a bed and say, go to your place. And that dog has to go there, lie down and stay for 6 months or whenever I release the dog, whichever comes sooner. And I remember the cook, and he was a chef, the major domo, and he was kind of frustrated because I told Brunhilde, go to your place. I swept the cat off the table and told Diva, the Maltese, to leave it. and I had a wonderful lunch of crab cakes, and he was very frustrated because the dogs weren't bothering anybody. And as I explained, you have to stop this routine at the table or it's not going to work.
All right, Lee writes, back in January, I rescued a two-year-old male St. Bernard, Charlie, who is such a puppy. He arrived knowing nothing. I've got an eight-year-old female Newfoundland, barely, and wanted a playmate for her. That has happened, and it's wonderful. Charlie is sweet, affectionate, and loves all people, with the exception of Barely. It seems he wants to kill any and every other dog. His growling is terrifying, and I don't know how to stop this. I got Barely as a five-month-old, trained her by praising the good and ignoring the bad, and she's unbelievably obedient. Getting Charlie as a teenager, I've been able to teach him sit, down, move, come, or working on stay, but need help with the aggression. Both dogs are small for their breed. Barely's 100 pounds and Charlie's 115. These are big dogs.
Yes. So this is aggression, I'm assuming, when you're walking on a leash. You're walking the dogs on lead and you see another dog again. This has to be a leave it. It's unlikely you're going to get the dog to change its attitude and say, hi, my name's so-and-so, what's yours, let's play. That's not going to happen, but the dog needs to respond to the words, leave it. So whatever it's focused on, when you say leave it, it has to ignore the other dog. That's not an easy lesson, especially if your dog is very aggressive. And the leave it command can vary from dog to dog, what kind of correction I would use. To get the dog to leave whatever I wanted to leave. And if you're familiar with Karen Pryor, she is the lady who trained the porpoises and the whales at SeaWorld. She's an excellent animal behaviorist. And as she said, reprimands are a necessary part of existence. And there are times your dog needs to be reprimanded if it doesn't leave it. And what reprimand I would use totally varies. I need to meet the dog and use, it's called LIMA, L-I-M-A, least intrusive, minimally aversive, which I wrote down, the International Association of Animal Behavioral Consultants. They use LIMA, the least intrusive, minimally aversive. So what I would use to stop your dog from aggressing, I'd have to meet the dog and see what works.
Yeah. Jude is calling from Hyannis. Hi, Jude.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my
call.
Good morning.
Do you, regarding the aggression in dogs, do you believe a large part of that is that some dogs are just, especially large dogs, that are just cooped up all day long in a small apartment?
Oh. Need more exercise, is you thinking?
Yeah. I don't think that aggression is directly related to exercise. There is a saying in my business, a tired dog is a well-behaved dog. There's no doubt about that. They have excess energy. But there are 6 to 8 different types of aggression. You have territoriality at the door. You have the dog that won't let you go near the food bowl, that's resource guarding. You have pain aggression. The dog hurts its leg and you go to move it and it bites you, a dog that would never dream of biting you. The classic case of redirected aggression, or what's called displacement aggression, your dog that would never dream of biting you gets into a fight and you reach your hands in there to break up the fight, and your dog may bite you down to the bone because in a fight it'll bite whatever it can reach. That's called redirected aggression. So I would need to ascertain what kind of aggression we're dealing with and then work with that, looking to create a different association. But I would not say that directly, you can exercise your dog like crazy, and if it's still going to be a resource guard, or it's still going to be aggressive over, even if it's tired, over whatever it likes to aggress over.
Yeah.
So I need more info.
Yeah, I need more information. All right, the book is Dog Training Diaries, Proven Expert Tips and Tricks to Live in Harmony with Your Dog. Tom Shelby, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your expertise with us.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
We'll post a link with more information about Tom and his book at our website, capeandislands.org. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.